Welcome back to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast, where every week your Extra Movie Butter boys break down the box office, the movie news, our personal favorites, and of course, the new release. This week, we're discussing Madam Web. But let me introduce my co-hosts. I'm so happy we're all back together. It's been a couple of weeks. We have the joyous Jen Kemp on later to help us review the amazing Oscar-worthy contender that was Madam Web. But first, let me introduce my co-host. I have the one and only Benny Hamlin and, of course, the illustrious JT. Gentlemen, how the hell are you? I'm excited for this episode.
Hello, yeah. America.
What's up, guys? It's going to be a fun one. I feel like every time I don't know if it's me or Benny going to say something first. And I'm always staring at him like, is he going to say something? Because Benny usually, you know, he'll sit back and relax. But I will say this. If you guys are listening to this, check out Settle the Score. If you haven't had enough of Benny and JTE, we were thrown into the, you know, the Thunderdome and had only one person was allowed to come out alive on Settle the Score. Matt Nost, who was on our show a couple weeks ago. It was a barn burner. It comes down to the very down to the wire, honestly. So check that episode out. It should be up now if you're listening to this.
God, I'm so excited to watch that. Yeah, special thanks to our good buddy Matt Nost for being on the show a couple of weeks ago. And yeah, I can't wait. God, I can't even imagine how many action movies were tossed into that episode.
Well, not a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was it just all Rocky movies and you guys just had to guess the tone from each one of the Rocky and Creed movies?
It was a good mix, I feel like. I feel like it had a little bit of everything in there.
Well, tune in, folks. It'll be a good one. You can find Settle the Score on YouTube. Well, let's jump right into the box office. Not debuting at number one, but what did debut at number one over this past weekend was Bob Marley One Love, the biopic centering around musician Bob Marley, brought in $28 million to be the number one grossing movie of this past weekend. Madam Web did come in at number two with a very dismal $15.3 million for its debut on an $80 million budget. Argyle was number three, $4.8 million. Migration, still bringing in chunks of money with $3.8 million at number four, $114 million domestic for that movie. The Chosen, season four, episodes four through six, still bringing in the money with $3.6 million. Wonka has to be one of the most profitable movies for Warner Brothers in the last couple of years, for sure. Another $3.5 million, $209 million domestic, just domestic for Wonka. The Beekeeper is still at it with $3.2 million for $59 million domestic. Anyone But You still at it with $2.4 million. Lisa Frankenstein debuted with $2 million. And Land of Bad, the movie that we're going to be reviewing next week, debuted in theaters with $1.8 million. Lots of numbers, lots of stories to tell. JT, kick us off. What do these numbers tell you?
It sounds like Sony has squeezed the last drop of the Spider-Man sponge that they could out of these characters. And they have two movies coming out this year. They still have Hunter, Kraven the Hunter with the guy, Kick-Ass himself and Taylor Johnson, which I don't have a lot of hope for. And then they have Venom 3. Venom 1 was okay. Venom 2 was pretty bad. The only good thing about it was like an hour, 28 minutes. I think it was like an hour and a half, which is rare these days in a comic book movie. We'll talk about Madam Web being 2 hours. Boggles my mind. It sounds like, you know, it's been a rough patch for comic book movies, really. And the last, you know, honestly, you know what? Here's what I will say. Aquaman did okay. It made, I think, over $500 million worldwide, which is not $1 billion like the first film. But it does show people are still going out to see comic book movies. They just have to make good ones. And we haven't had a really good one in quite a while, I feel like. I think Guardians is probably the last really good comic book movie, Guardians 3. And I didn't even love Guardians 3. I had some issues with that movie, but a lot of people seem to like it. I think Marvel, you know, is doing the smart thing. They got one movie coming out this year, Deadpool, which, you know, we talked about the Super Bowl trailer last week. I feel like that's going to reset the table, and then next year they're going to come back strong. But Sony, I don't know what Sony's doing. It's so weird because they have the Spider-Verse movies, which are amazing. It just goes to show you it matters who's producing and directing movies. It can't just be a property. What was number one again? Bob Marley. I still need to see Bob Marley. My sister saw it. She's a huge Bob Marley fan. My dad is a huge Bob Marley fan. I love Bob Marley. Thing is, that movie, I think, was originally going to be like a fall release. I think they were hoping Oscar. And the fact they dropped it in February, to me, says a lot before the movie even came out. We're in January, February, you know, very much considered dumpy-wary. It is where you put all the movies that you don't believe in or just don't are horrible. And I think two of those movies are in theaters right now. I think Bob Marley is a movie that is okay. It's good, but it wasn't the Oscar hopeful they were expecting. And then you have Madam Web, which is, you know, trash fire.
Benny, what's your thoughts about the box office, buddy?
The Bob Marley success, because, like, you know, it and Madam Web, they both opened midweek, so their box office is higher than the weekend totals. But the Bob Marley one kind of caught me out of the blue because, you know, I'm not a huge Bob Marley fan. Like, when it comes to reggae, I prefer Jimmy Cliff. So sue me. I have bad taste. But, you know, I from the Midwest, where Bob Marley has not necessarily ever been a hot commodity. So I just had a blind spot as to how popular he is worldwide. So the success of the One Love kind of took me off guard. I was kind of surprised by it. Madam Web, I'm not surprised. You know, they did not market it at all. They put out one trailer for the thing and then just threw it out there to die. And, you know, it did exactly what they expected it to do. And JTE's right. Like, Sony, it's really weird. Like, consistently, like, the movies that they've made outside of Venom, they're like these throwback to the late 90s comic book movies in every kind of bad way. And they're consistently doing it. Like, Craven's going to be the same thing, too. And they're going to lose money on all of them. And so it's kind of just odd that they keep doing it. But I will say that this, I finally watched Migration, and it's a really cute kids movie. And it's an hour and 25 minutes. So, like, I'm glad it's, you know, generally I'm not a huge animation fan, and I hate when animation is somber. And Migration is not a great movie, but it's fun. And it's joyous. And so I'm glad it's succeeding, because that's the kind of kids' movies that I want to be made for little kids. It's just movies that are fun and joyous. So I was really happy to see that it keeps plugging along. And for the love of God, I don't know why you people are still going and watching Anyone But You. That movie is trash. Stop going to see it. Let it go to streaming and die the way that it should.
I will say I did watch Anyone But You with my girlfriend last week. Because we found it streaming. It's not horrible.
It's not horrible.
It's not really good. It's honestly, it feels like a Netflix, you know, rom-com that somehow made it to theaters, probably because you had Glenn Powell and Sydney Sweeney. But yeah, it's not a new classic. It's not going to be something I feel like people are going to revisit over and over again. It's a one-time watch. Look at two ridiculously beautiful people. They have a little bit of chemistry in the beginning, and then by the end, I feel like it's wasted. So I was pretty mixed and negative on it, but I'm not in Betty's camp. It's not, you know, it's not the Covenant. Your face isn't going to melt if you look at it.
Like, I no longer have bad shit to say about Poor Things after seeing that movie. That's what I thought of that.
Oh, wow. Well, I haven't seen Anyone But You. It is on my secret channel that I'm not supposed to talk about. So I'll probably give that a watch, just obviously hearing your guys' takes on that. The Bob Marley thing is interesting to me. I think Bob Marley's story is, it's perfect to be adapted into a biopic. And I will actually be seeing that movie this weekend, considering the movie that we're going to be discussing next week, we can view on streaming. So I will give you guys kind of a little, maybe like 10-second review of my opinions on One Love. You good gentlemen might like this. I watched The Iron Claw today.
Oh, what did you think, brother?
Here we go.
So not being a wrestling fan, I thought it was a very good movie. I enjoyed it a lot. There was the sequence at the end, and we can spoil it because we've already spoiled it on this show, where after Carrie Von Erich commits suicide, they have kind of a segment where he's like going into the afterlife. And I knew to expect it, but it, it actually was way more impactful for me than I anticipated. I thought, well, when is this scene coming? When is this scene coming? And it doesn't just kind of hit you over the head. It's, you know, he goes on the boat ride. He leaves a token for, you know, the ferryman. Like, it was just very beautifully done. And then he gets to see his brothers. I did think it was interesting that, like, his oldest brother was a baby. But it makes sense because he died when he was a child. So in the afterlife, he would be a child. But, yeah, it was great. I think a little bit differently about Zac Efron. I don't think he's necessarily the greatest actor I've ever seen, but holy God, did him and the cat from The Bear, like, how do you get to look like that? My God, like the physiques on those gentlemen. But yeah, it was a good movie. I don't know if it would have cracked my top 10 for last year, but it definitely would have been the top 15. It was a good flick. I'm glad I watched it.
I'm curious, because you were in our spoiler review, so you kind of knew everything going in a little bit.
Yeah.
Did you think that affected your for you at all or no?
I did. So I didn't realize, like, three of these brothers die. And two of them are from suicide. And so it's like the oldest brother, you know, died when he was a baby. And then the second one had, like, the ruptured liver. And then the other one got septic poison and came out of the coma and was massively depressed. Like, it really is, like, quite tragic what happened to the Von Erich family. And, like, how they all just kind of believed it was cursed. Like, even Carrie, when he, right before he committed suicide, was like, it's in me. The curse is in. Like, it's a tragic tale. Like, I ended up going and reading through, like, the Wikipedia page on the Von Erich family. It very impactful movie. I thought it was well done. There was, for as much drama as there was happening, I thought there was too much wrestling. But I realized that this is a wrestling family. Like, I would have liked to know a little more, like, behind the, like, family dynamic, but still, I enjoyed the movie. Very tragic tale. As far as my takeaway from the box office, The Chosen, like, just keeps bringing in money. This is a TV series, right? Like, this is streaming, or is this specifically being released in theaters?
I'm not sure about that, but you gotta remember, like, it made more money this weekend because there were new episodes. So it's not like it's getting repeat. It's not like they're go watch the first three episodes. It's like, it's almost like if you went and saw the first three in theaters, you need to go next week to see the rest of the story.
They know how to market to that crowd, I guess. And I, like Benny, also watched Migration, and I, like Benny, found that movie extremely charming.
Really? All right. Yeah. Maybe I'll give it a watch.
I did. I don't have kids. I'm 41 years old. It's just my wife and I and the dog. And I just threw on an animated movie last night to help me fall asleep and ended up just thoroughly enjoying it. So I think that Kumail Nanjiani is a hilarious.
Even he's the voice? Just,
yeah, he's the voice.
Well, I didn't know that.
Of the father duck. And so even just hearing him in voiceover still gets me chuckling every time.
Speaking of throwing on movies last night, I threw on a movie last night I hadn't watched since maybe the 90s. And maybe Benny knows this. Maybe you do, Moose. Do you guys remember the film Terminal Velocity?
Of course.
Benny? Uh-oh. We might have stumped Benny here.
Who's in it?
Charlie Sheen.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. Gandolfini's in that one, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. He is in a small role. And Shooter McGavin plays one of the villains.
Shooter McGavin is the bad guy. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And I remember seeing it in theaters in the 90s and really liking it. And watching again last night holds up pretty well, I got to say.
Nice.
That movie's all about skydiving also. You know, skydiving is a big part of that movie. Same year that movie came out, Drop Zone, with Wesley Snipes came out, and the villain that was Gary Busey. So I might have to go rewatch that one. You know, if you're going to watch Volcano, you got to watch Dante's Peak. You gotta watch Armageddon. You gotta watch Deep Impact. So I've watched Terminal Velocity. I now have to watch Drop Zone.
You need to do like a 90s Sheen rewatch, like watch The Arrival.
If you're going to watch a Charlie Sheen movie, it's Men at Work. Amazing movie.
Sir, I own the Blu-ray collector's edition of Men at Work.
As well, you should.
There's actually a screening this, I think, next week in LA of a Charlie Sheen film called The Chase. Do you guys remember The Chase?
With Christy Swanson.
With Christy Swanson. The whole movie is a car chase. Red Hot Chili Peppers are in it. Like, it's got a ridiculous cast. And I think they're screening it with, like, the writer and director or something this year, week in L.A., and I'm tempted.
The Men at Work is my favorite Keith David role.
Oh, man. He's amazing. He's amazing, man. Yeah. Two rules in life. Don't touch a man's french fries is one of them like that.
Yeah. Well, on to a little movie news, guys.
Let's do it.
Today, the Borderlands preview came out. Now, if you're unfamiliar with Borderlands, it was a very successful video game franchise. The first Borderlands video game is still one of my favorite video games of all time. This one directed by Thanksgiving director Eli Roth. Cast includes Kevin Hart, Cate Blanchett, Ariana Greenblatt. Ariana Greenblatt having huge couple of years for herself. And Jamie Lee Curtis. I'll start with this one because I love the Borderlands game. This looks bonkers, and I'm all for it. This looks like such a fun time. Like, the way that the preview was shot kind of reminded me of, like, the original Guardians of the Galaxy trailer. Like, they had just, like, kind of an old, like, classic rock song playing. It's just these crazy events are happening in this movie. You've got Jack Black voicing, Claptrap, the little robot. I'm jazzed about this. I do not in any way, shape, or form think that this is going to be the greatest video game adaptation, but I do think I'm going to walk away having a hell of a good time from this movie. It looks bonkers. Listen, if Cate Blanchett, two-time winner, Oscar winner, Cate Blanchett, fresh Oscar winner, Jamie Lee Curtis, Kevin Hart's a very known commodity, Jack Black, like, you got these actors and actresses who are coming to be in this video game movie. There's got to be something special here. So I'm excited for it. This trailer looks bonkers. I watched it like five times because I was just having so much fun with it. So yeah, sign me up. Take my money right now.
Well, you love Guardians of the Galaxy, and the whole time I'm watching this trailer, I'm like, okay, they're trying to make Guardians of the Galaxy the video game, basically. And I'm glad I wasn't alone in thinking that, because I went on Twitter afterwards and everyone's like, wow, Borderlands is trying really hard to feel like a James Gunn Guardians movie. And I'm like, yep, that's exactly how I felt. So I think even the music in it is another song from one of the bands that was in Guardians. So here's the deal. Eli Roth directing this is an interesting choice. He did Thanksgiving, which I was so on. I know Benny was a big fan. You know, I don't love his horror movies. You know, he does those really violent, hostile films, Cabin Fever. They're fine. Apparently, the movie that I think is best reviewed film is the one he did with Cate Blanchett before this, which was called House with Clocks on the Wall. I believe it's something like that. I might be saying it wrong. The House Clock with the Clocks the on wall. The Wall. Clock in the Wall, yeah. So that movie got really good reviews. It's one of Eli Roth's best reviewed films. He worked with Cate Blanchett, and apparently they had a really good time working together. And she gave him a lot of compliments. I remember when she was doing press for that film, she gave Eli Roth like a lot of compliments as a director. So I think it's interesting to see like she's starring in this movie with this cast and crew. The biggest thing for
Jack
me
Black
is
Jack Black was in that movie too, right?
Yes, exactly, Jack Black. Yep. Yeah. So I mean, you're watching this movie, and I'm like, so they must have had a good time working with him because he brought them all back. The problem is, one of the biggest issues for me is Kevin Hart has never been in a good movie, in my opinion. I can't think of a single good movie where Kevin Hart is in it, where especially if he's in one of the leads.
You Jumanji, don't like the Jumanji movies? That,
maybe the first Jumanji is the closest I could get to it, but to me, the standout in that movie was Jack Black, and The Rock was fun in that too, but it was never because of Kevin Hart. So I don't love him being cast in this movie. I just don't think he really makes good movies, but I'm going to trust in Cate Blanchett. I'm going to trust Eli Roth. It looks visually fun, and it looks like the cast crew is having a good time. And, you know, it is hard also because video games movies are just – they're rarely good. Let's just say that. So hopefully this will break the mold and be a fun time at the movie theaters, though. I will see it. I'm not a huge video game guy. For Borderlands, I played, I think, Part 2 co-op, but I never finished it. So I don't have a huge – like relationship with the franchise. I'm like a recent one, Uncharted. I'm a huge Uncharted fan, so I had a lot more at stake for that film than I do with this one.
So the last video game I think I actually paid money to buy was Madden 98. So I am not a video game person by any stretch of the imagination. But and if you had shown me this trailer 2 months ago, I would have been totally off board because I generally have despised Eli Roth movies, and I have generally not been a huge fan of Kevin Hart movies. But Thanksgiving cracked my top 10 last year. I loved that movie. I had so much fun with it. And then like a couple weeks ago, I watched a Kevin Hart movie called The Man from Toronto, which is like a streaming movie. And JT's shaking his head.
Awful.
But I laughed throughout the whole thing. So like I'm riding high right now on Eli Roth and Kevin Hart, more so than I ever have in my life. And I don't mean to objectify her because she's one of the most talented actresses on earth. But if Cate Blanchett is playing cosplay, I will go and watch it. And so since I'm really high on those two and Cate Blanchett is doing cosplay, I'm going to be there opening day. So I'm actually pretty pumped about this movie.
This movie's going to be bonkers. Well, of course, we have to talk about our next topic, which is going to be the Marvel has finally confirmed the Fantastic Four casting. We have Pedro Pascal as Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic, Vanessa Kirby as Sue Storm, Invisible Woman, Eben Moss-Bowrick from The Bear as Ben Grimm, which I can't wait to talk about that, and Joseph Quinn as Johnny Storm. You recently saw Joseph Quinn on Stranger Things. He played Eddie in that. He killed it in Stranger Things. I'm not going to go first because I'm too excited to talk about it. So, Benny, kick us off, man. What do you think of this Fantastic Four casting?
I think Pedro Pascal will do an amazing job. But he's one of those actors you could really put him in most roles, and I think he would do a good job. Vanessa Kirby, I'm a fan of her, but I think she generally is in movies that I don't like, but I think she's very good. So I'm excited to see her in a Marvel movie. Now, I'm going to mess up his name, but Eben Moss-Bowrick, like I'm not a huge Bear fan. I watched the first season, and he was the best part of it, I thought. And he was also amazing in the Punisher series on Netflix. Mm. Like, you wouldn't
That's
know
right.
that was the
Microchip.
Yeah, you wouldn't know that was the same dude doing both of those characters. That guy can flat out act, and being like a curmudgeon sidekick, he is born to play that kind of character. So I am over the moon about him being Ben Grimm. I don't watch Stranger Things, so I don't know much about Joseph Quinn. But the other three, I'm really amped to see it. And I kind of get a feeling that we're about to have a turnaround in Marvel just because they are pumping the brakes on everything and they are fine-tuning everything. So I think next year is going to be a very big year for Marvel. So I'm getting a lot of positive energy right now about it.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good cast. Pedro, I was a little shocked. I was like, how old is Pedro? I think he's like 48 years old. And I was like, man, you would think maybe they'd go a little bit younger for, you know, Mr. Fantastic, because he's going to have to be in MCU for maybe 10 years. But I think that's close to the age Robert Downey Jr. was when he was cast as Iron Man. I think he was around that same age. So I guess it'll work. And, you know, I'm sure they have a plan. Not all these guys survived the MCU forever. So I'm sure Mr. Fantastic 10 years from now will die in a very Iron Man way. I do think the guy from Stranger Things is a great choice. I think he was the highlight of that last season. He had like Robert Downey. He actually reminded me of Robert Downey Jr., a young Robert Downey Jr. a little bit when I was watching the show. So very charismatic. Yeah, the thing, I mean, is he just doing voice work? He'll probably do mocap work, kind of like Mark Ruffalo. He's a good choice. I hear his voice from The Bear as the Thing, and I think it's going to be really fun. And I agree with Benny. Vanessa Kirby, I think, is a really good actress. She was Oscar nominated, but she hasn't picked the greatest roles, especially Hobbs and Shaw. I do like her in the Mission Impossible movies, so I think this will be a good lead role for her. So overall, thumbs up on the casting.
Yeah. Excuse me. I'm thrilled about this casting, particularly Ben Grimm. Cousin from The Bear. He was also the standout, I think, in season 2 of The Bear. And Benny, to your point, like Ben Grimm can be just that like curmudgeon Hulk sidekick. And I'm all for Eben playing this role. I'm excited. I think that's outstanding. Joseph Quinn is Johnny Storm. Perfect casting. I love it. Yeah, when he played Master of Puppets in Stranger Things and The Upside Down, that was such an awesome. If you want to get a good kick, like go on YouTube and watch videos of him with Metallica, where they bring him on stage and he plays like actually plays the guitar to Master of Puppets. It's awesome. Yeah, Vanessa Kirby makes sense as Sue Storm. She's been rumored in that role for a very long time. I think Vanessa Kirby is a very talented actress. I came to know her from the Netflix show The Crown. That was kind of one of my wife and I's favorite shows. She played the Queen's sister in The Crown. And even then, as we were watching The Crown, I remember telling my wife, like, there's like she's going to be something special. Like, she's going to be big. And we most recently saw her in Napoleon as Josephine. I think that was – I didn't like Napoleon movie, but I thought she was really good in that role. And then Pedro Pascal, come on, it's Pedro Pascal. Pedro has proven that like he is a veritable force. I think it's interesting him as Reed Richards. I agree. He's a little long in the tooth. But it, some of the more like more modern, Marvel comics has Reed Richards as kind of an older gentleman. Like he's got a beard. And so he's not kind of that like young spry guy. So I'm all for this. I agree with Benny, too. I think Marvel's doing the smart thing. I think Deadpool's going to be a major reset. Deadpool's going to be one of the largest movies of the year, Deadpool and Wolverine. And I think Marvel is doing a good job where they've heard enough people go, like, dude, chill. Slow it down. And then, like, even with, like, a movie like Madame Web. Like, Madame Web, like, there are just a lot of shitbox comic book movies that are coming out. And I think the only way that Marvel Studios continues the MCU is you have to pump the brakes and you have to deliver spot-on content. And I think that the casting for the Fantastic Four shows that they are investing in the future of the MCU by bringing in good talent and hopefully making good movies. I think that's the only way. So I love this cast. Excited for it. On to our next story, which is Jurassic World. We've talked about this a couple times now on the show, but David Leitch has now dropped out of directing the next Jurassic World movie, which we all said, maybe it's too soon for Jurassic World. However, Jurassic World landed Gareth Edwards now as the director of this next movie that is supposed to be coming out next year. Gents, does this take a whole new spin for you on this upcoming Jurassic World movie? JTE.
I'm mixed emotions about it. I'll quote our friend Jacob Blunden, who said, whether it's good or not, it'll probably be the best looking film since the original two films, which I agree with. You know, I was a huge fan of the creator. Visually stunning, amazing looking. But the story wasn't there for me. And I believe you had a hand in the script. The fact that David Koepp, who wrote the original Jurassic Park and The Lost World, is writing the script for this one, and knowing that Gareth Edwards doesn't have to worry about that, and he just has to deliver what's on the page to the screen in the best visual way he can, I feel like he could do it. I mean, I love Rogue One. It's one of my all-time favorite Star Wars movies. I feel like as long as he's not writing and he's not involved with the story, and he's... A lot of people say this in the press. They're looking for a director to shoot the movie. It wasn't like, hey, here's a director to create the movie. And, you know, a lot of times the director will sit with the movie for 6-8 months to a year before they even start shooting. This is not quite the situation. They had a great script, or at least they say they have a great script. They need a director to come in and just shoot the shit out of this thing quick and fast. And I think he's probably on paper one of the best directors you get for that, because he's not adding to the story so much. He's going to put his touches on there. But he's such a great visual filmmaker, and his effects look so good. We've been complaining about the Jurassic World series and how the effects don't look good as the original Jurassic Park movie. I think he's going to deliver great special effects, great-looking dinosaurs with a unique style. We just got to hope the story is there and that's not being rushed just to make some money.
Benny, your thoughts on Gareth Edwards' Jurassic World?
I'm going to echo JTE a lot. When we had our initial conversation about this a couple weeks ago, we were all really leery of David Leitch being the director of this movie. Gareth Edwards seems on paper to be a much better fit for it. He is a sci-fi director. He makes beautiful sci-fi movies. They are not always the best stories, the best written, but they do look amazing. And Rogue One is my favorite Star Wars movie. I know that other people really contributed to its final outcome, like Tony Gilroy. But that being said, you know, as I said before, this needs to be a very simple story. If it's a very simple story and he puts the visual detail into it, he does in his other sci-fi movies, it could be something beautiful. I didn't think David Leitich had a chance of making a good Jurassic Park movie. You know, whether or not he will or not, Gareth Edwards at least has an opportunity to make a great Jurassic Park movie.
I think this is huge for the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World franchise. I think Gareth Edwards is prime director to get for this franchise. I'm going to echo what you guys said. Rogue One is my favorite Star Wars movie. But I hearken back, like I liked the creator, I think, a lot more than you guys did. But we can't deny how like visually stunning it was. But then I also go back and I look at like Godzilla. So Gareth Edwards has made like a big animal movie already, right? A kaiju movie, right? Now he's sizing it down to dinosaurs. That Godzilla movie was great. It was so much better than so much of the other crap that came out following. Like, sorry, every movie after that, like initial Gareth Edwards Godzilla movie has just taken like a dive. Like it's terrible. I watch it because it's big monsters fighting each other, but the scripts are terrible. The movies are awful, but it's
don't throw shade on Minus One, buddy. Don't throw shade on Minus One.
That's not part of that like whole like Monarch universe. Godzilla Minus One is a triumph. Okay, that was in my top five movies of last year. But no, I'm fired up about this. I think Gareth is perfect cast, or perfect to be able to like lead this movie. I will also echo our good buddy Jacob London. This movie is going to look incredible. Look what he did with an $80 million budget with The Creator, right? Obviously, they're going to pump a bunch of money into this. So if he can do what he did with The Creator with an $80 million budget, he's probably going to have like $100 million budget to be able to toy around with. This dude is going to like bring dinosaurs back to life for real. Like, I'm excited for this. And I agree with both of you guys. Keep it simple. We just need really a good dinosaur story. Like, we don't need to get overcomplicated. We don't need to have locusts the size of my forearms flying around. Like, we don't need this on an island. Like, just give us a good Jurassic Park story. I'm excited for this. I think that he's going to be perfect. I like Gareth Edwards as a director. I also think that, like, he gets good performances out of these movies and especially the characters. So I don't know if we're getting like the Bryce Dallas Howard, Chris Pratt group back again, or if this is just going to be a whole new group. I'm hoping it's a whole new crew.
According to the reports, none of the actors from the previous franchises or the previous trilogies are coming back. So it'll be all new cast. So I think that's good. I think you need a fresh start. Yeah.
Perfect. Because if the whole idea behind the Jurassic World series is accurate, everyone in the world is now affected by dinosaurs. It doesn't have to keep centering around these like four people. Well, we are going to wrap up. We're going to go move into our next segment, which is where your Extra Movie Butter Boys will be ranking our favorite Sony-verse Spider-Man movies. That includes Venom, Mobius, all of those fun ones, Madam Web included. And then after that, of course, we are going to give our Madam Web review with the one and only Jen Kemp. So please stay tuned.
You're changing. I went through exactly the same thing at your age on May 3rd.
Not exactly.
Suit up. With great power comes great responsibility. For the ultimate spin. I wanna take you on a roller coaster. Awesome! Spider-Man.
You do too much. You're not Superman.
Rated PG-13.
I'd do anything to save a life.
I don't want to see you get hurt more than you already have.
This would be a cure.
At what cost?
You did it. You found a cure.
Not exactly. I can't control it.
Michael, stop!
All our lives we've lived with death. Why shouldn't they know what it feels like for a change?
Just accept who you are.
The bad guy.
Morbius, a new Marvel legend, arrives only in theaters.
Welcome back. And once again, I know I say this all the time, but I really do have to give JT credit. The sponsors that he lines up for us, they're outstanding. just outstanding. Well done, my friend. Well, we are going to throw our spin, our favorites on the Sony Spider-Verse movies. Now, these are excluding MCU movies. So we're not going to include any of the Tom Holland Spider-Mans, and we are not going to include Spider-Man No Way Home. I understand that they used a lot of the Sony-verse characters, but we're going to exclude Marvel movies because they're made by Marvel Studios. So this is purely Sony-directed movies. There is 11 of them. We have counted, folks. So what we are going to do is we're going to give our 11 to 6, so our bottom to middle of the pack, have ourselves a discussion, and then we're going to talk 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So JT, kickoff number, your 11 to 6 rankings.
All right, 11 to 6. Spoiler for our review today. Number last place is Madam Web at number 11. We'll talk much more about this movie very soon. After that, I'm going to go Amazing Spider-Man 2. I think the Amazing Spider-Man movies are unwatchable. They came out, and I said to myself, I think as a society, we've decided those movies just didn't happen. But then No Way Home came out, so we had to start recognizing it. They actually happened. So they did. Number 9, following up Amazing Spider-Man 2, is Amazing Spider-Man. Again, I don't blame Emma Stone. I don't blame Andrew Garfield.
Morbius,
I have at number 8. I will watch
the Amazing Morbius. Spider-Man is under Morbius.
100%. It wasn't even a question. It wasn't even a debate in my brain. Wow. I will watch Morbius, a bad 90s comic movie, than a bad Amazing Spider-Man movie.
Ballsy choice.
Thank you. Number 7 is Venom 2. It gets some pass because it's so short that, you know, you can fall asleep for half an hour and it's halfway done. So Venom 2, they totally messed up Carnage, but Tom Hardy's still giving it his all, so I'll give him that one. And number 6 is Venom. Venom, the first one, is somewhat enjoyable. Definitely more than Venom 2. So again, number 11, Madam Web. Number 10, Amazing Spider-Man 2. Number 9, Amazing Spider-Man. Number 8, Morbius. Number 7, Venom 2. Number 6, Venom. Whew.
All right, Benny, give us your 11 to 6.
All right, at the bottom of the barrel, I have It's Morbin Time, Morbius, which is brutal. Oh. It took me 3 attempts to actually get through it. And number 10, Into the Spider-Verse. Go ahead, throw your booze at me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Mamma mia.
I hate the animation style. The story was generic. I hate that pop animation style. So like any movie that has that animation style, for it to overcome it for me, it has to be special. And this one is not.
Wow.
Okay. Then we have The Amazing Spider-Man 2. I think there's probably a good movie somewhere in there that you could edit out, but that's not the one that they gave us to it. And then right after that, I have Madam Web, today's thing. A lot like JTE feels about Morbius, Madam Web is just a bad 90s comic book movie, but I'm okay with that. And then we have Venom 2, which I really enjoy Venom. I love Tom Hardy as Venom, but Woody Harrelson as Carnage just did not work. And I forget the actress that played Carnage's significant other. Yeah, that just did not work at all in that movie. And then we have The Amazing Spider-Man 3, which is sad because I think that there's probably...
There is no 3. There's no Amazing Spider-Man
3. He just meant Spider-Man 3.
Spider-Man 3. So I think somewhere out there, there is probably a fan edit where they take all the Topher Grace stuff out, and it's one of the best Spider-Man movies ever made. But the one that they released in theaters with the Topher Grace Venom is just cringeworthy. But the stuff with Thomas Hayden Church is great. But again, I have to judge it based on what they gave me, not what I think is in there somewhere. And what they gave us is just cringeworthy. So that's what I got for my bottom. So I have Morbius, Into the Spider-Verse, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, Madam Web, Venom 2, and Spider-Man 3.
Who hurt you people? Golly. All right. My number 11 is Morbius. That movie is atrocious, god awful. I like Benny. It took me 4 tries. If it wasn't because of the Schmodown, I would have never watched that godforsaken movie. 10 minutes into the movie, I was like, nope, I like legitimately can't, like, stopped watching 10 minutes into my first viewing of Morbius. Number 10 is Madam Web. Number 9 is Venom, Let There Be Carnage. So as a lifelong comic book reader, as a lifelong comic book fan, I actually thought Woody Harrelson was going to be outstanding. Like, it's perfect casting for Cletus Cassidy as Carnage. But, God, that movie was so terrible. So, sorry, that's my number 9. Number 8, Spider-Man 3. I, like Benny, agree that there is a good movie in there. And if you know the stories behind, like, San Raimi and the studio interference with Spider-Man 3, like, he had a whole movie set basically around, you know, James Franco's Green Goblin and the Sandman. And the studio was really pushing him to throw Venom in there because they wanted to continue to pump more Tobey Maguire movies out of it. And so... what you got is what you got. I agree. We're not judging it based on the movie that it can be. But judging it based on the movie that we have. So Spider-Man 3 is my number 8. Number 7, The Amazing Spider-Man 2. Same thing, studio interference. See, I very much enjoyed the first Amazing Spider-Man with Andrew Garfield. And at the time, I thought, like, this is a very, like, fresh take on Peter Parker and the character of Spider-Man. I liked Lizard as a villain. So I enjoyed that one. The Amazing Spider-Man 2 was like, how many references to the Sinister Six? How many people can we shoehorn into this? Like, it just kept pushing. Dane DeHaan's performance as the Green Goblin is atrocious. So, yeah, their Amazing Spider-Man 2 is terrible. And then, you know, 6 is kind of middle of the rank, and that's where Venom falls, the first Venom movie. The Sony movies baffle me. They really do. Because you get top talent. Like, 10 years ago, if you had told me that Tom Hardy was going to be playing Eddie Brock, was going to be playing the character of Venom, I would have shit my pants out of excitement. I would have been like, oh my God, that's incredible casting. Like, no way we're getting this Oscar, you know, winning actor. And then the movie is just, I hate the term, like, oh, it's a throwback to 90s and 2000s movies. It's like, yeah, but it's not. It's happening in 2017. It's happening in 2024. Like, I understand a good throwback. Like, if a movie feels like it's in that time period, then that's a good throwback. But these movies don't feel like they're in that time period. These movies are taking place now, and they're just terrible. And, like, it's crazy to me, like, how many people – Jared Leto as Morbius. Jared Leto is an Oscar-winning actor. Again, like, I'm like, good for you, Sony. You must be just paying out the ass, like, just dumping – dump trucks of money on these, like, stars' lawns to get them to sign up for this, because the finished product for all of these movies is garbage.
Well, let me just say this. I'm shocked you guys have Morbius below Madam Web.
Why? That movie is the worst.
I'll tell you why, because it looks like it was actually made by a director who knew how to shoot a movie. Madam Web is not only bad on a story level, it is bad on just a filmmaking. I could grab a kid off at a high school who's a film student, and I think he would have better chance of making a competent looking sounding movie than Madam Web. Madam Web is bad at a level that I have seen very few times.
Maybe, I think we should have this conversation.
Yes, I will.
Section 3.
But here's what I'll say. Morbius is done by, I can't remember the director's name, is Daniel Espinosa, I believe. He's the director who's had some success. He actually has a style. He has some sort of vision. Some sort of vision. When I'm watching Morbius, I'm like, here's a director who at least had a script where he's like, all right, this is what I could do with it. That is not the case with Madam Web. Morbius is at least competent. Just being competent is enough to get you over Madam Web in my book. I tweeted this out. Madam Web makes Morbius look like the Dark Knight when compared. The chasm is that wide for me. So
no way.
When we get to our review, I mean, even the action sequences in Morbius are at least competently shot. There's even when people talk to each other, it doesn't sound like it was generated by AI and ADR. I can't believe you guys.
It looks like somebody threw luster dust on an Atari game in Morbius. It's horrible.
At least it's an effect. It's something that was accomplished by an artist. Nothing about a web is accomplished.
Gentlemen, first off, we're comparing whether a cat turd and a dog turd taste one tastes better than the other. But yeah, Morbius is the worst movie. So let's go to from our 5 to our number 1s. JTE, once again, kick us off, buddy.
All right, number five for me is Spider-Man 3. I agree the Topher Grace Venom stuff doesn't work, but there is some really cool action sequences in the movie. I think the Sandman storyline is good. The ending feels rushed, so, but I still have to put it above Venom or Amazing Spider-Man. I'll watch Spider-Man 3 over those movies any day of the week. Number four for me was Across the Spider-Verse, a movie I really enjoyed. It's a lot. We reviewed it on the show, but technically a Marvel, and it has me excited for the next Spider-Verse film. At number three, I have Into the Spider-Verse right after Across. I still prefer Into the Spider-Verse over Across. I just think it has a beginning, middle, and end. It was a perfect Spider-Man movie, and it was the first of its kind, and it blew my socks off when I saw it in the theater. And I was like, this is amazing. This is a new kind of animation. So I had to give it that. So it comes down to one and two, and those are the two Topher Grace movies. I gave number two to Spider-Man, and I gave number one to Spider-Man 2, two of the best Spider-Man movies ever made. There are things I enjoy almost more than in Spider-Man 1 than I do in Spider-Man 2. I think it's a little bit more entertaining, but I think Spider-Man 2 brought the heart and what a true superhero movie should be in the second one. I think it's Sam Raimi's best Spider-Man movie, so Spider-Man 2 is my number one. I'll just go over one more time real quick. Number five, Spider-Man 3. Number four, Across the Spider-Verse. Number three, Into the Spider-Verse. Number two, Spider-Man. And number one, Spider-Man 2. Raimi is king.
All right, Benny, give us your 5-1.
All right, number five, I have Across the Spider-Verse. So, again, I think Across the Spider-Verse, even though it ends on a cliffhanger, I think it has a really interesting story. And I love all the different variations of Spider-Man. I just really hate the pop art kind of animation. It's hard for me to get past. If this was done in the very traditional style of animation, I think it would be higher on my list. Then next I have The Amazing Spider-Man. And I think a lot of the Spider-Man movies are defined by their villain. I thought Riz Ifans did a really good job as Lizard. And it's a little slow pace for a superhero movie, but still I thought the villain was good. I thought the portrayal of Spider-Man was good. So I enjoyed it. And then I have the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie, which I think is an excellent movie. It's one of the better superhero movies out there. There's really not a lot of fault that I have onto it, although there's some cheese to it, but the superhero movies of that era always had a level of cheese, and that's okay. And then number two, I have Venom. And I will admit that there are a lot of movies that are objectively better than Venom on this list, but Venom is the most rewatchable movie on this entire list for me. Mm. And it's mostly just because Tom Hardy is a really good actor, and he's really funny as Venom, and it's joyous, and that's something I prize in movies. So given that a lot of other these movies are better, it's the funnest out of all of these for me. And then the best one is Spider-Man 2. It has the heart. It has a perfectly crafted superhero movie, especially for its time. And Alfred Molina may, you know, I would have to think about this more. I mean, you could argue Josh Brolin, but Alfred Molina may be the best superhero villain in the history of superhero movies, like this and No Way Home. He just knocks it out of the park as Doc Ock both times. And he really draws you into that movie, you know, because he's not just evil, you know, he's someone that you understand. And I think that's really important to have a great villain. So again, I have Across the Spider-Verse, The Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Man, Venom, and Spider-Man 2.
My number five, I have The Amazing Spider-Man. Number four, I have Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Number three, I have The Original Spider-Man. Number two, I have Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And number one, I as well also have Spider-Man 2. For all of the reasons that you guys are saying, but I like Benny, also continue to gravitate back to Alfred Molina as Dr. Octopus. I think that he adds just this tragic backstory. Like, you can empathize with him. And his arc in No Way Home is
outstanding. I mean, that obviously has like no impact on the movie Spider-Man 2, but it does a little bit. But also, like, the action seems more ramped up. The effects look better than the original Spider-Man. Like, Spider-Man 2 is one of, like, probably the top five best comic book movies of all time. I would make that argument. But yeah, again, number five, The Amazing Spider-Man. I liked Andrew Garfield in this role. Yes, it's slow. I liked Reese Ifan as the Lizard. I had a good time with that movie. That one's my number five. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, sensory overload, but still great. I think once we get the next Spider-Verse movie, watching those two back-to-back might elevate this movie into a better movie. Three, Spider-Man. It was kind of like mainstreamed comic book movies, this original one here with Sam Raimi. And yeah, to Benny's point, like, you look at it now, and there's a lot of cheese in there. The Green Goblin is just pure cheese. Like, I actually think No Way Home's version of the Green Goblin is like bonkers crazy. It's wonderful. But I enjoy that movie for what it is. I remember seeing that movie in theaters and being like, wow, like, we're going to get them all. But then we got a little while, and then the ones that we did get were pretty terrible. But Spider-Man still holds up. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, it's a beautiful story. It's beautifully animated. I love that movie so much. And yeah, Spider-Man 2 is my number one. So interesting. We all had Spider-Man 2 as our number one.
I mean, the only shocking thing for me, I guess, is Venom being number two for Benny, but it fits Benny's profile. I just, you know, Macho Man spinning in his grave. I can't believe you would put a bone saw below Venom. Like, that just, it's crazy to me. Bone saw alone elevates that movie to number two.
I have shitty taste. I make no apologies for it.
Amazing Spider-Man. I'm shocked you guys like those movies so much. Maybe it was just the time it came out.
Hang on. Movie, not movies.
Yeah.
The Amazing Spider-Man 2, I think we can all agree, is garbage. Okay.
It's garbage.
Yeah. So that first one, here's what I remember. I mean, I've not rewatched Amazing Spider-Man movies. Even when No Way Home came out, I rewatched the Tobey films, but I wasn't rewatching those amazing movies. So maybe I do have to give them our watch. I just remember leaving Amazing Spider-Man pissed because Dennis Leary, on his deathbed, said, "Please, for the love of God, leave Gwen alone. Promise me you will not have a relationship with her. Promise me you will leave her alone because everyone that meets you will die." He goes to school the next day, and he's like, looks back at freaking Emma Stone and says, "Some promises are meant to be broken." You douchebag. You tell this lady's father on his dying deathbed that he's like, "Please, I'm dying. Leave my daughter alone. Promise me." He says, "I promise." And then one of his last lines in the movie is, "Some promises are meant to be broken." What a piece of shit. I cannot believe it. I was done with him when I left theater. I said, "I'll never like this guy."
I think part of the problem is when I first saw The Amazing Spider-Man, I did not like it a lot. But I think that's because the reboot was so soon after the originals. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get Tobey Maguire's portrayal, you know, out of my head. It took like a few years before I was able to just, like, when I rewatched it later on, I was like, okay, it's a different thing. And in my head, I was able to separate them. And then after that, I really enjoyed the first one. The second one is trash. There's no bones about it. But the first one, you know, I think had its merits a few years after I had time to breathe.
And again, I don't blame Emma Stone. I don't blame Andrew Garfield. I think the script was horrible, and I thought it felt like it was just all over the place, and none of the action was memorable. This moment, I don't remember any of the action. But again, I haven't seen them since theaters because I was so mad and pissed off after watching them. So maybe I'll have to give them another chance someday. Because there are movies I go back. I've realized this lately. A little confessional here. I've gone back and watched movies that I hated from the 90s, and I actually like them a little bit more now. So maybe I need to go back and give it a watch.
There's a couple of scenes in The Amazing Spider-Man. Like, one that immediately comes to mind that's extremely memorable is he's been shot in the leg and he has to make it from like one side of the city to Oscorp Tower on the other side of the city. And like the crane workers move their cranes in unison. That whole like sequence is awesome.
I hated that. I hate it because I was like, are you telling me these guys, these construction workers in New York can't build a sidewalk in a month? Yet all of a sudden, they're all able to coordinate through walkie-talkies to create this perfect line for him to go. It was a callback to Sam Raimi when he did the bridge scene.
Yeah.
All the guys are throwing stuff, but it was done in the opposite way. Whereas Raimi did it the right way, I feel like he did it the worst way. We might have to have a trial of the Amazing Spider-Man.
I think we're going to have to. Shit.
The only problem is I have to watch it again, but I will be willing to do it to tear that movie ass off.
Guys, I think that's our next one. Trial of the Amazing Spider-Man.
I'm down.
Well, you've heard our rankings, folks. Spider-Man 2 is the best of the Sony versus Spider-Man movies. Morbius is by far the worst.
Disagree, but we'll get to that.
Stay tuned, folks. We're going to have our review of Madam Web up next. And, of course, joining us is the amazing Jen Kemp.
I made a promise to stay away from you. A promise that I couldn't keep.
What if something happens to you because of me?
Gwen, no!
Not everyone has a happy ending.
Every decision you make affects the people you love.
You want to fight? Fight me!
I want you to meet Spider-Man. Weed.
Rated PG-13.
When do I know I'm Spider-Man?
This was never your city. It's mine.
You won't. In the end, it's a leap of faith.
Can't stop me now!
Hey, guys.
Who are you?
I'm Spider-Woman.
If we don't work together, none of us will have a home to go home to.
Now, we taught him that, right?
I didn't teach him that, and you definitely didn't.
Into the Spider-Verse, only in theaters December 14th.
Welcome back, folks, and joining us for our review of the Oscar-worthy Madam Web is the one and only Jen Kemp. Jen, thank you so much for coming on the Extra Movie Butter Podcast.
Wait, I thought we were talking about Dune Part 2. I don't know if I want to be a part of this conversation, honestly.
Oh, God.
Can we talk about Part 1? Let's talk about Part 1.
Dad, I would love to be able to do that right now. I'm sure Benny has
actually ranked Madam Web. Yeah, I have things to say about Dune Part 1.
That's a good point. I will say this, you know, when we're looking for a guest, sometimes what I'll do is I'll go to Letterboxd and see, one, who saw the movie, and two, what they rated it. As I was looking through the Madam Web, you know, reviews, 1 star, half a star, star and a half. I was like, I need to find somebody who didn't absolutely hate this movie. And I see Jen Kemp, 2.5 stars. That was by far the best score I'd seen on Letterboxd.
It's so a glowing said, review. Right. 2.5. Yeah.
So I was like, we got to get somebody on here who, you know, has something to say positively about the film, at least in some aspect. So I'm excited to have her on and hear what she has to say.
Thank you. Yeah.
So I do have to ask, because we'll go into non-spoiler reviews right now. Jen, we'll ask you for your review first, but quick little synopsis of the movie. This movie's directed by S.J. Clarkson, first directorial debut. This movie was penned by most of the writers of the movie Morbius, another one of Sony's award-accoladed movies. This movie stars Dakota Johnson as Cassie Webb, a.k.a. Madam Webb. You have Sydney Sweeney as Julia Cornwall. Isabel Merced as Anya Corazon. Celeste O'Connor as Maddie Franklin. Tahar Rahim is Ezekiel Sims. I've got a lot to say about his performance. We have Adam Scott in this movie. Ben Wyatt is in this movie, folks, as Ben Parker. You get Emma Roberts as Mary Parker, and of course you get a little bit of Mike Epps as just the character O'Neill. He's Captain O'Neill. This movie centers around Cassie Webb, who there's a lot to digest in this movie, but really her mom is researching spiders in Peru. Her mom is shot. Her mom finds a spider that supposedly gives you, well, I shouldn't say supposedly, her mom finds a spider that grants the person it bites superhuman powers and abilities. her mom is shot. Her mom dies. Her mom gives birth to Cassie Webb, who is bitten by, who has the ability to be able to foresee potential futures. Yeah, that's the movie. We're going to go into our non-spoiler reviews because any more description of that movie and I have to relive what I sat through. So we're going to kick off with Jen. You ranked this movie 2.5. Now, that just could be a personal, like, I feel bad for the people involved, so therefore I gave it 2.5. But what are your non-spoiler reviews? Did you enjoy the movie? Did you find some redeeming qualities in it?
Yeah, honestly, I had to be reminded what I actually gave it in terms of rating, because this was such a strange experience coming out of it. And I have thought about it nonstop since I got out. And I ended up probably at 2.5, because, am I going to come on here and say this is an amazing movie and everyone deserves to go see it? Yes and no. Because I cannot lie that, like, it was an experience, and an experience that I think is fully encapsulated when you are surrounded by other people going through it, because you cannot describe this movie to someone who hasn't seen it, because they will think you, like, you need to go to the mental institution. Like, it is so strange. But I think the reason that I am forgiving with this movie, I'll say forgiving, that's a good word to go with, it's set in 2003. It has that kind of energy. I think that was a lucky happenstance on their part that they actually ended up in 2003. I don't think that's where it started in the beginning. But it's just the choices made are very distinct. And you cannot, like, you have to admit they're kind of inspired, because it is just bonkers off the wall throughout. Is it predictable? Yes, because they literally, like, show you everything that's going to happen within the first 15 minutes or so. But I think, I don't know, you have to look at it through a certain lens, I think. Like, the way that I ended up with my ranking is, like, JTE's here, so I have to put it in Sly Stallone's terms, of, like, you don't look at Over the Top through the same lens that you would look at Rocky.
Yeah, of course.
So yes, it's on a sliding scale whenever I go into any film. So, like, depending on the genre, depending on the director, depending on the property, this came from a supremely bizarre premise to begin with. Like, how many stories do you know that center around a blind paraplegic that happens to have prophetic powers? That is a weird place to start. So the ceiling is not high. But having said that, I enjoyed this movie. Was I laughing throughout 90% of it? Yes. Was that intended laughter that they wanted me to have? Probably not. But the reason that it works, I think, is strictly because you mentioned that it's the Morbius writers. So when I first heard that, and full disclosure, I know someone who worked on the movie. I do.
Okay.
From a production standpoint, had nothing to do with the writing, had nothing to do with the acting. She's a production designer. She had to do with the sets. That diner, she completely created that diner from scratch. It looks amazing. Oh, okay. It's fantastic. So you cannot deny that, like, the actual scenery looks really good. But I like the colors. Like, there's actual colors in this movie. But, like, when I first heard Morbius team was writing, I was very concerned, because I'm like, I hated Morbius. I did. Mm-hmm. It's a slog. But the reason that these are different, they're both slogs in terms of, like, actually setting through them, I understand. But for me, Jared Leto, however you say his name, I can't decide. He thought it was a very serious property, and he took it very seriously, and he wanted you to take it seriously too, even though we all knew it was morbid time. But Dakota Johnson knew that he was in the Amazon researching spiders with my mom before she died. So, like, she immediately checked out. So it's not Cassie Webb, it's Dakota Johnson throughout this movie. And I think that's really what works for me, because she has such contempt for what she's doing that you can't help but laugh. So I admit, I would say, considering what's out there right now, it's a fun movie to go see in the theater, because you should, if you sat down to watch this by yourself, that's a bad time. But if you sit with a bunch of other people, this is a laugh tracks kind of movie. Like, we had people groaning audibly at certain points and then laughing about it. So it's fun time in the theater, but don't expect it to be Citizen Kane. It's not going to be.
Wow. So much to say. Who's next?
Why don't you take over? You have nothing but contempt for this movie.
Let me tell you what I did when I left the theater. The first thing I did was I pulled out my iPhone and I Googled worst comic movies of all time because I needed to see where this landed. And after looking at that, this is, I think, maybe the worst comic movie I've ever seen. Excuse me. I think it's worse than Jonah Hex. I think it's worse than Elektra. I think it's worse than Van Forstick. I think it's worse than Morbius. I think it's so bad that it's dumbfounding in some ways. Here's the thing. And I, when Jen said, like, you're in a theater, I saw this in a pretty packed IMAX theater. And what you said happened. There were groans followed by laughter. The difference is, once you take yourself out of that theater and you say, I'm just home on a Friday night and I throw this in, I'm not going to have fun because there's
Don't do that to yourself.
But here's the thing. I need, like, when I watch No Way Home in theaters, great time. Everyone's cheering and everything. But you could go home and watch No Way Home at home and just have a great time with it because it's a great movie. I feel like The Room is so bad, it's enjoyable if you just have a couple friends over. I just don't think Madame Web gets to that area. I think it was so bad that first time, but nothing about it makes me want to rewatch it again with friends or like have drinks. And maybe it will over time. Somebody asked me after the film, is it a movie that's so bad it's good or is it just bad? And I said, it's kind of both. Like there are times where I was laughing and I couldn't believe how bad it was. But there's also times where I'm like, holy shit, I'm only an hour into this movie. I have another hour to go. I felt like Clockwork Orange with my eyes being pried open. I was like, I don't know if I can stay here for another hour. I'm going to go take a bathroom break. I just need to get out of here. I think the movie is so badly made on every level, script, the editing. I don't know what happened to editing. It's like if a plane crashed and somebody came and said, you need to put this plane back together from scratch. And it's all over the ground, an explosion, there's pieces everywhere. That's the kind of job I think the editors have with this movie. They were given a car wreck, a plane crash, and said, rebuild this plane. And they couldn't do it. The ADR is awful. The main villain is ADR throughout this whole movie. I'll have to wait till spoilers because there's so much this movie that makes no sense. And I don't want to watch it ever again. there's not a part of me that wants to go back and watch it just for fun. I just thought it was awful.
Benny, lay the truth on us here, buddy. What'd you think?
So I probably have a closer experience with the movie than Jen does. Like I think on Letterboxd, I had it at 2 out of 5. But I considered it given 2.5 out of 5. Is it a good movie? No. But it's not like Morbius where like I'm going to actively avoid watching Morbius for the rest of my life. Like if I'm in someone's house and they put on Madame Web, you know, I'm not going to be like, yes, but, you know, I'm not going to be upset about it. It's fine. You know, it's set in 2003. It feels like a movie that was made in 2003. So, I mean, there's some symmetry there. I think what the movie suffers from, really, I don't think really the dialogue isn't great, but I don't think the story in its of itself is horrible. Like in general, superhero movies, they don't have complex, really in-depth story movies. And I'm a sucker for comic book movies. It has a pretty simple story. I think there are some
a pretty simple story.
Yeah.
5 minutes in the movie, there's spider jungle people who come out of nowhere. I was like, five minutes in this movie, I was like, what the F is going on?
Like, how is that any weirder than Guardians of the Galaxy 2 when we're fighting a giant slug in space, you know? It's like...
because we're in space where there are aliens or mutants. Who are these spider jungle people?
There's mutants in Marvel now, too, so it's allowed.
Okay. So I take back everything I said.
So it's a thing. I think there are a few very bad performances in this movie that make it feel... like a much cheaper and worse movie than it is. And it suffers from a very, very bad villain. And I don't know if it's the actor or the writer or what have you, but it's hard to get behind a superhero or a group of superheroes when the villain is really pathetic. And we can go into that in spoilers, but I think over and all, it's not as a horrific movie as people make it out to be. There are just a couple of really bad things in the movie that people are focusing on. And that's what I felt watching the movie.
Moose, talk some sense.
This is a bad movie, folks. This is a bad movie. Like, I came into this knowing fully because Spider-Man is one of my favorite heroes. Again, as a 41-year-old man who still buys comic books on Wednesday, I'm very aware of Madam Web. And it is very, 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 very obscure Spider-Man canon. Now, I understand that Sony has rights to these very obscure Spider-Man properties like Morbius. And they're making these movies with the intention of one day maybe having their own Spider-Man universe here, right? I think eventually they were planning on having Tom Holland show up into one of these. But you're already taking a very obscure property like Madam Web, right? And it's not like this is going to be her own solo movie. And then you hire the guys who shit the bed with Morbius to write the movie. I will agree that the sets look great and the diner looked absolutely outstanding. Jen, I want to make sure your friend gets credit for that. It looked even better once the taxi went through it.
Mm-hmm.
Spoilers. But this movie had everything go wrong with it. The script was atrocious. The pacing was atrocious. The performances were atrocious. The villain's performance, my God, was awful. Yes, the lines being dubbed in just didn't look natural. The action sequences just suffered. Like, there was kind of a cool action sequence. There was maybe like one that stood out to me that was like a very like intriguing scene, but the rest of it was just, it was terrible. And the fact that they're trying to just shoehorn in as many references to Spider-Man that they possibly can is awful. It just, it almost is like a stock depreciating. Like, you're just watching it as it's slowly like just bankrupting. And you're going like, wow, I'm glad I didn't buy stock in that. But sadly, we all did. We all paid to go see this movie. And it is terrible. So we bought stock in Madam Web. And sorry, that is a depreciating stock. Like, this movie has so many things wrong with it. But I will agree with Jen and Benny in that, like, I may watch this movie again. Like, it's, and I was laughing at all of, like, the scenes that I shouldn't have been laughing at, like when I first see the indigenous tribe show up, I'm like, oh, really?
It's like 4 minutes in. It's really early on. It's like really it's sad.
So
it's,
early on.
It's shocking.
And then my first thought was then, okay, so like anybody can be Spider-Man. Like, he's not like an accident. Like, it's not destiny or, you know, manifest destiny that he becomes Spider-Man. Like, well, there are just Spider-Men in the world that exist and have existed for a very, very long time. Well,
it's like Black Panther. We didn't know about Wakanda. They were doing all this cool stuff. Yeah. Like,
should we let's jump get
their
spoilers?
Movie.
Let's go into spoilers. Cause let's start there with yes. The Spider-Men okay. Show up.
So
4 minutes into the movie, right?
This is supposed to be like a prequel to the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies, correct?
So it was originally supposed to be Tom Holland was the baby. No, actually, I think it was originally supposed to be Andrew Garfield because that lines up chronologically supposed to be. And then I feel like a lot of the problems with this film are because they had a lot of ideas. They were trying to read the room as to what people want to see and consistently taking big leaps and then getting worried. So it's a constant battle of, oh, everyone's crazy for Spider-Verse right now, so we should also do kind of a Spider-Verse kind of thing where we tie in these new characters to a character people know. Let's have a woman be the lead because we're kind of getting that way towards Marvel now because they're way too late to the game to that, and now they're overcompensating. We need a couple of different diverse characters from different backgrounds. We have that with the teens. But then they start backtracking because they like that. I think that's the main problem is we've already mentioned it of the villain because they hired Tahir Rahim. Like, I am not familiar with him. He's an international actor. Apparently he was Napoleon, but Napoleon was such a slog fest that I couldn't remember what character he actually played in there. Like, it's a long movie. Terrible but he was set up to fail from the beginning because they, I feel like they took a big swing of like, let's get someone who's kind of critically acclaimed that we don't really know, but he has a good standing prestige internationally. But then they panicked and they're like, audiences aren't going to be able to understand his accent. So we're going to have to ADR everything that he did. And we were going to do Andrew Garfield, but then they were worried it wasn't going to tie in and they want to do other things with him. So let's move it to Tom Holland. But no, we don't want to make Tom Holland look bad. So let's just disconnect everything. But then Emma Roberts is there randomly to be the mom to Spider-Man that we'll never see. So it's very strange. The minute she showed up, I'm like, I would love to see every single script A through Z that they went through before they got here. Because I think that's the problem is they did a bunch of stuff, tried to change it in post-production, didn't have the footage, cut around whatever they could. So it's very strange.
I just don't understand like what they thought that Madame Web would be a good movie. I just like, what were they, of all the other characters you could have made movies about,
yeah,
why did they go with her? Her skill set, like on paper, Final Destination meets Spider-Man could be a cool concept if done correctly. Her powers are never really fully fleshed out. I don't really understand what's going on half the time.
And she doesn't either. That's the best part.
You're right.
And then they give her this villain who's like an evil Spider-Man. So you're telling me there was a guy dressed like Spider-Man before Spider-Man who was just, yep, people are seeing this guy. He's out and about, man. He's riding around New York City.
Going to operas.
Yeah, so when Spider-Man came around, are they like, oh, it's that guy from 2003 that was killing people. Another thing I'll say is her powers don't work well visually. Her main power in this movie is hitting a guy with a car. I think there's three instances where she hits him with a car. This is what keeps happening. The girl's in trouble. I need to steal a car. And when I get there, I have no skills of fighting or tools or powers that can help me. So I just need to hit him with a car. She hits him with a taxi. The ambulance scene, how did she get above the car? She like came out of like a ramp, out of a sign. It was maybe the biggest.
It was a Dukes of Hazzard ramp around the sign.
Yeah. Okay. I remember watching like she's trying to get there. And all of a sudden she comes out of like a second story building, lands on him perfectly. He would makes him drop his grenade and blows up another car, probably a family in there. He didn't care about those people.
It's the 2000s. They didn't care about the collateral damage back then. It's fine.
And then the finale, she is. So let me get this straight. The finale is they're in a firework factory.
Hang on. Before we get to the finale, okay, we still got a lot to be able to digest here. So.
Like her powers,
when are we going to get to the fireworks factory?
Oh, dude, I can't wait to discuss the finale because I got some choice words. Apparently, she doesn't give a shit that Uncle Ben's about to die at some point. She sees the future. She can't do anything about it. Just saying.
But only seems to be like she only sees the future in like 30 seconds. It's like Prince of Persia. She has a 30-second window.
It's like Arrival. She's getting better as time goes on. She's getting these flashes, and she has this is an origin story. She has to learn how to use her powers. She only learns how to use them in the last like 2 minutes, but that's what it is.
We're back at the beginning of the movie. This guy has visions also, and he sees that these girls are going to kill him, correctly?
Yes.
And how is he able to perfectly describe them so that they know exactly what they look like in the real world? Like, how does that happen?
She's like, how was the original Siri? That's what it is.
Even a sketch artist ain't going to be able to give you a
Patriot Act. It was 2000.
They're trying to use technology. They're using face recognition technology to find these girls. And yet all they have to go by is his memory of his dreams that somebody is somehow able to draw up. He doesn't know their names. Like, how are they even able to get their faces?
This is an extension of the zoom and enhance cliche, and I love it. Okay,
so it's
been a while since we've seen that, and I love it. It's fantastic.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, you're drawing a line. Well, that technology can't exist.
Yeah,
nothing in the MCU can exist. Yeah. None of that. They can't exist.
Well, we're not talking about technology. We're talking about how does he get their faces picture
perfectly?
Perfect,
yeah,
so that they could use the technology to find them throughout the city.
Well, and she immediately.
It's been 30 years. He has had the dream for 30 years. I mean, I guess if I saw the same face over and over every night, I could probably give an apt description.
More importantly,
enough to get to face
his helper.
Technology?
His helper found all three of them with like all of their information, without even like narrowing it down to. It was like immediately she went from "Who are these girls?" to "Oh, I know exactly where they are."
Also, the like computer system that like his like you know, tech savvy
series of monitors has.
I'm like, wow. Like, I remember my computer in 2003 and it was 8 inches thick. Like, that's pretty slick. But I will say this, like, the spider people arriving 4 minutes into the movie, the indigenous tribe, I'm sorry, Jen, what were they called again?
Las Arañas. Yeah. No, that opening 5 minutes is the roughest part of the whole movie. Like, I was so concerned in the first minute because that's the worst. Like, there's a lot of bad line deliveries, but the two of them, the mother, I don't know if that actress has ever done anything before, but her and the ADR, I won't even say it's his name because he's ADR. That's what it is. The two of them together, it was rough. And I was like, oh, God. I started leaning. I'm like, oh, God, is this what the whole movie's going to be like? And so, yeah, it was really bad that first
There's run. No way.
And the thing is, it doesn't need to be bad. There. That whole There's scene, no if we just opened with Dakota Johnson, you yeah. would have had the same story because we learn everything and then we see her learn that stuff. We could have just done that later. So if you just cut that whole, do the Finding Nemo thing where you come in after Coraline, just skip that whole thing because they're going to go back to Peru inexplicably. So,
but see, that's not what this movie is about. This movie is about over explanation.
Yes.
Like, there is legitimately a scene in this movie where she's discovering how to use her powers and she narrates,
yeah,
well, that future's not going to happen if I just open, like, I can't change the future by opening the window based on the visions that I'm having that somehow seem to allude to me having this precognitive ability. Like, she has this conversation with herself and then she opens the window and the fucking pigeon flies in. Mm-hmm. Like, there are several times in this movie, like, when that happened, I was like, and it was me and like one other person in the theater.
Well, the interesting thing was for Mike Epps's death scene, which is like the first time she really starts to get that maybe I'm yep. not crazy. That's the whole Matrix with the whatever, what's her name? It's just mystical. I forget where her actual name is, but it's the vase problem of would he have died if you had not done anything? And the answer is no, because she held him up for like 3 minutes for that garbage truck to slam into him. So it's interesting.
Can somebody explain to me how he died? I saw it, and all it did was dent the door a little bit. She even runs up to him.
He didn't.
It's not like he was like shot out the window. She opens the door for some reason. There's like blood around his chest, and he's just dead. And I was like, I've been in worse accidents in LA, and walked out and said, "Hey, maybe you hit my car."
Got Mike Epps out of the movie. Let's not complain.
Yes.
He squeezed the burgers too hard. He had to
got himself a paycheck. After we're done with this podcast, JT, I'll hit you with a dump truck and let's see. Let's compare notes here. And
I guarantee you, I won't be dead the second you pull me out of the car.
I don't know. I don't want to take that kind of bet. Let's not do that and hit each other with dump trucks. But let me ask you guys this: so we get Ben Parker, right?
Played we get Adam Scott.
Yeah, we get Adam
Scott. That's what Scott. We really get.
We get Ben Parker.
Two of my stars are probably there for Adam Scott, so honestly.
We get Peter Parker's mother. We get plenty of references to him being excited to being an uncle. Is there too much forced Spider-Man nods in this yes. movie? I mean, obviously, we have a guy dressed as Spider-Man, right? There's way too many references of with great power comes great responsibility. Like
that one towards the end was so bad.
Oh my gosh. Like Spider-Man Jesus, when he drops it on her, like
everyone,
I was like, oh my God, no way. But
horrible.
I don't know. That is one thing that absolutely, like, I just, every time something was a nod to Spider-Man, I rolled my eyes and it felt like I was rolling my eyes so much. I got dizzy. Like, I understand that, like, Madam Web and it comes from the Spider-Man canon. But I also, like, thought that a big miss in this movie was, like, the foreshadowing of the Spider-Women team that really never comes to fruition and is more so just, like, trailer bait to like get us to come and see, because we think that we're going to get this movie where we eventually, and sure, at the end of the movie you get to see a little bit of the Spider-Women in action, but really up until that point they're just three high school teens and you never learn how they get their abilities, you never learn how they become this Spider-Woman team, which I thought, like, when she found the girls, I thought, like, slowly throughout the movie, like, they would be able to, like, expose that they have abilities or they would start to manifest, you know, these powers. But none of that came to be. And so it just kind of felt like, wow, you included that a lot in the trailers. And I think all of us were like, well, at least we'll get like a little bit of like Spider-Woman kicking some ass.
Yeah, nothing.
We really didn't get that. And then
this, it's like a prequel to a movie we haven't seen yet, but the movie is actually as though we've already seen it. Like, it acts like we've already seen these women as Spider-Woman, and here's how they became that. Whereas we don't even know who the hell these women are. We don't know what their powers are. And when they flash forward to these, like, sequences of actually playing women, it's like somebody typed into an AI creation machine, show me Sydney Sweeney as Spider-Man. And that's what they play like, these, like, 10, 30-second clips of them just being a Spider-Woman for a second, but tells us nothing about them, how they got the powers, or nothing.
Also, why do they go after Taheem at the end? Like, what is the reason for killing him? I thought they were superheroes. Like, there's no explanation as to why they will go to kill him.
So,
aside from he's just a bad dude.
I think
they actually go towards him. I think they're running away from him.
No, they show up to kill him in the movie.
Oh, like, yeah, like, that's
what's like a reoccurring dream.
Yeah. What the movie shows is that it's implied that like they went to take his spider and they kill him. There is a hypothesis out there that there was an earlier script where he was going to kill Spider-Man. So they went to go get him to not do that, which makes a lot more sense. Okay. And I just have my own headcanon of his whole relationship with the spider is so strange. And just his opening of like, I deserve this. I'm like, what do you? I don't really know what's going on. But he has like his little moment where it's like he's playing with it and he has this very luxury looking greenery apartment in the center of his living space for him and everything. In my headcanon, it's like, oh, he has to keep like getting the venom from the spider to keep his powers. They never said that, but I'm just going to assume that's what they were going for. So they must be like, oh, we have to go get this. Otherwise, he's going to keep doing apparently nefarious rich people things because he has apparently access to NSA stuff now. So that would be bad. Well,
who's this assistant lady, by the way?
I know.
who's this lady who just
is
to help him find
his lady in the chair for hire? That's what she is. And she's I didn't get she's a genius at computer stuff, but she can't do math. Because when she has that line of, I didn't realize that people in your dreams from 30 years from now would be teenagers. Like, that is such a strange thing for her to realize. Yeah. So strange.
What is your guys' thoughts about Dakota Johnson's performance? I can't wait to ask this question.
Paycheck. I think she was, first of all, the fact that she fired her entire representation before this movie came out, I think tells you exactly how she feels about this movie. She was probably like, oh shit, this is going to be horrible. Why did my team sign me up for this? Like, I need new representation. So I think she's there to get a paycheck. She said she hasn't even watched the movie. She probably never will, she said. Or maybe she will one day. It's a paycheck. I'm shocked this movie even got released. Like, they should have, you know, Coyote versus Acme.
Let's not promote the tax write-off, please.
I'm not. No, but, like, I would have buried this movie and released it in 10 theaters in New York and L.A.
It could have been a Disney Plus thing. It could have done that.
It could have. Yeah. Throw it to streaming. Mm. Like, this helps nobody's career. It doesn't help the director. Doesn't help the writer. Doesn't help the actress, the actors. I don't know who this helps except for putting some money in Sony's pocket, probably.
I don't think Dakota Johnson was terrible other than the last 10 minutes where she is playing a version of Professor X.
Those glasses.
Yeah. Oh, so bad.
Yeah, that's pretty rough. But other than that, I didn't think her performance was bad. Like, the villain, I don't even think he was horrific. They just kept having him say the same two lines over and over again for 45 minutes, so he became annoying. The only like actors in the movie or performers I thought were really terrible were the young ladies, two of them that were playing the teens in the movie. Like, those were just bad performances. I can't remember the names, but Sydney Sweeney, as I've said off air, at least in everything that I've seen her in, she is not a good actress. And she was not good in this. And then I think the lady's name is Celeste. Like, her performance is just like a stereotype of 90s rebellious teen that is just ridiculous. The other young lady was fine. But like I said, there are no world-class performances in this, but Dakota Johnson was fine.
I think the lead actress has to be better than fine. I think if you're going to carry a movie, you have to bring something to it. And it felt like she was just sleepwalking through the whole thing. Like, she can be charming in certain roles. I just don't know if this was the right role for her. Put it that way.
Would this have been the right role for anybody? Is there anybody that's going to step into this movie and then all of a sudden this is a 5-star thing?
No.
Oh my God.
She tried with the MCU. Yeah.
They failed her miserably. So
could somebody have been better than Dakota Johnson? I absolutely think that could have, but when it saved the movie, it wouldn't have made any better. But I could be like, all right, well, at least that actress brings a little something to the role. The scene where she like decides to climb up and falls down, I felt like there was, I was just like, what is happening right now?
I love that scene.
Pure cheese. You don't understand. Like, honestly, yeah. I think Dakota Johnson, she is Cassandra Webb. She was a perfect choice, in my opinion, because this is a weird character. And it's even stranger because it's completely different than what she actually is in the comics. So, like, they brought her in and, like, she's pretty much playing herself in this because she has, like, built a brand of being just a very strange and off-putting kind of individual. Like, some of my most entertainment from Madame Web is watching the press junkets and everything for this. Because she, like, I think it's, a good barometer for how she'd approach this movie is, like, a couple years ago or something. She did this straight, I think they just made fun of it on SNL when she hosted, which, again, they're doing great pushes for Madame Web. That's the thing. It's in the zeitgeist right now. Ride that wave, because she just did SNL, and Sydney Sweeney is going to be hosting this Saturday. So I'm very excited for that. But she did this weird video of her touring her apartment for Architectural Digest and commented about how there's so many bowls of limes around. And she keeps mentioning look at all these limes. It's fantastic. Limes, they're so chic. And then it comes out afterwards. She's allergic to limes. They were put there by a set dresser. So she leans into shit. She doesn't care. Like, she has the very memeable moment with Ellen DeGeneres of that's not true, Ellen. Yeah. Like, she is going to give you back any grief that you give her. So Cassandra Webb, she's a paramedic that's a sociopath. She doesn't want to get involved or help people, which is not exactly the person you want in an emergency situation. But the scenes with her and Adam Scott, I think those are some of the best things in the whole movie, because she feels a little bit more balanced because Adam Scott is just naturally charming and he does a fantastic job, even though he's given nothing to do in this movie. Yeah,
nothing. But that's Adam Scott. That's just Adam Scott.
But his charming nature kind of it's a nice foil to her extreme awkwardness, honestly. So it's really interesting to watch. And I think that's why I enjoyed the movie, was I just kept going, okay, that's a choice. Like, every time she does a line reading, she has later in the film when she's having her epiphany moment about her mom, when she goes through into the vision and she sees her mom as she's pregnant, and her first reaction, she has never met her mother. She has built up this whole thing in her head of oh, my mom went to the, she just went to Peru for no reason while she was pregnant with me. And she sees her mother and her first reaction is, why do you hate me? It was so strange. That was the biggest laugh I got in the theater. I was oh my God, this is amazing.
The fact that she flies to Peru halfway through this movie, the whole movie goes on pause.
And she has the taxi back. When she gets back. She hit that in a really good spot.
Well, one, we don't even learn how she, as a baby, makes it from the Amazon jungle.
Yeah.
Serenius dropped her off.
Yeah, I'm assuming.
She had the birth certificate. So technically, she is a Peruvian citizen. So I guess she can cross the border easier, even though it's past 9/11, and that's probably not the best time when you're wanted for kidnapping, which she totally did. That was one of my main things, was the kidnapping thing. Because right before she said, no, but this is kidnapping. You have kidnapped these children. And then she ditched them on Ben Parker, her best friend, and he didn't care. I was like, you are the best friend I ever.
Don't forget,
they never identified her. They just described her.
They described her.
Well,
and she's the most generic looking woman. So, honestly,
well, according to you, Benny, the sketch artists in New York are the best in the world.
It's true.
You just give a description, they'll find her immediately.
That she has that red leather coat on the whole movie, so they'll find her.
Is that like her? That's here's the thing. Madame Web is a side character. Should never have had her own movie. No. She's somebody in she. I don't know if there is a Madam Web comic series that all about her, but I just don't know why they thought this would make a good movie. Can we get to the fireworks scene?
Because her web connects us all. Don't you understand?
In all fairness, Iron Man was like a fifth-tier guy before his movie. So you never know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Iron Man was always an Avenger. He was part of the original Avengers.
He was there.
So I could absolutely see, like, cinematically, but...
Like, and he could, like, go out and do stuff, whereas she just sits in a chair. So
yeah. Morbius is like...
Professor X, he's sitting in a chair. He's made
of... But he can has a two people do stuff. Like, she's essentially... Madam Web is the Watcher, which, granted, the Watcher appears on What If, but he's a narrator. He doesn't actually do things. Yeah. So, like, they were like... this is one of those things where I think it's just Sony is like throwing darts at a board and hoping something will stick while also thinking that their audiences are kind of stupid, because that's why there's so much like explanation. They're worried that we're not listening and we're not paying attention. So they keep repeating the same lines, and they just don't, they think that we're, they're constantly feels like they're like preschool teachers, and they're worried that if they're not moving, you're going to lose attention. So it's a lot of interesting choices.
Yeah, Sony lent Marvel all the good characters, really. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, and what they have left in their stable is they're really just trying to squeeze as much juice as they possibly can out of these lemons.
Yeah.
You know, look, when you think of Spider-Man villains, Morbius is like the 20th villain that you may come up with. You know, when you think about like Spider-Man side characters, Uncle Ben and fucking Madam Web are way on the bottom. Like Uncle Ben, you know, from great power comes great responsibility. That's it. Then he dies.
He's just a nice guy.
Rhino, Scorpion, Shocker. There's more villains that are way above Madam Web and more.
They don't want you to think about the Sinister Six movie that never happened. That's what's going on.
And Sony really is trying to make their own thing happen. And like as my like personal opinion is Sony is trying to tank Sony because they saw how much money that 20th Century Fox got out when Disney bought them. And they're just like, okay, we can just sabotage ourselves.
I mean, at the same time, like this year, there's not a lot going on. So this is a good time for them to just push whatever they had in production. It's like, hurry up and get it out there. It's like, Kraven the Hunter, we'll get you later. Madam Web, get out there right now. It's like, it's kind of a wasteland for superhero movies. So it's like, get it out now. And hopefully there's just a bit of a gap. So people are like, well, I guess I'll try it. So
Ghostbusters is next. So let's hope that's better.
Yeah. It's not for a while. So no, Dune. Let's go to Dune. Let's switch to Dune talk instead. Desert power, not web power.
I'm going to say this. I think Kraven the Hunter is dead on arrival. Yeah. I think that movie is going to do terrible.
At least it's rated R.
At the box office.
At least it's a hard R. That's the only thing that might give it something.
Kraven the Hunter should have been introduced as a Spider-Man villain.
I 100% agree.
Like, he should not have his own movie. None of Spider-Man's villains deserve their own movies. And then they make them all anti-heroes. Like, oh, they're all kind of good guys. Okay, why the fuck is Spider-Man fighting them? Like, all right, well, JT, you've been wanting to talk about fireworks.
Fireworks factory. Okay, like, no, when are they going to get to the fireworks factory?
It's just so dumb because, like, her power is she has, like, 30 seconds. So her thought process is, let's light all the fireworks, and I'll be able to tell you exactly where to go so the fireworks don't hit you. First of all, if 100 fireworks go off at once... How are you, like, even if you see the vision of them all going off? She created
this situation,
How are you supposed to know? And at one point, like, these fireworks aren't, they're not cannonballs. A firework at one point blows a brick wall down. And I'm like, what kind of fireworks are these? I used to buy fireworks. Nothing could blow a hole through my wall.
Have you blown up a fireworks factory? You don't know. What's your hypothesis? You got to try it for real.
The thing that shot out of that box could not blow up a brick wall.
Okay. After I'm done hitting you with a dump truck, you go then blow up a fireworks factory. We're going to put all these theories
together. We're going to miss all the MCU.
An explosion does not blow out the brick wall in this movie. A single firework shoots out. She ducks. It hits a wall, and the brick wall explodes.
To be fair.
That's military style.
They set up in the beginning. They actually set something up. They set up in the beginning when they had the Mike Epps goodbye. Like, that was the factory. So there has been structural damage from the fire. So it was a condemned building that inexplicably still had all of the fireworks in it, even though there was already a fire in that building. So it was a business that continued to run. It's like, that's America right there. So, and they're right by the water. So who knows? It's just, I just assumed it was illegal fireworks. That's what I thought. So
the whole thing with the sign falling on him to kill the main bad guy.
Fantastic.
You watch this movie. The bad guy in this movie should have killed these kids about 10 times, even with her powers. Like, he's just like, the last scene felt so bad, and the way she like kept tempting him to come, like she's waiting for this thing to fall.
She kept looking back and forth from him to the killer. I'm like, dude, pick up the signal. Like,
also, I thought one of Spider-Man's skills is dodging and sensing that something is about to hit him. This guy is basically Spider-Man. He's not going to get killed by a sign.
Yeah, but he's a bad Spider-Man, and he was overtaken by his rage.
Also, let's not forget that Pepsi was a sponsor.
Pepsi Cola. Definitely a sponsor.
I know. Why aren't there Madam Web cans out right now? Like, I know we had that one ocean spray in Japan or something that actually showed her suit, but like, I want like a Code Red with Madam Web on it. I would have bought it. We went to like we always go to the AMC, and they have a tendency to like do a random flavor for the movie. And I was a little we looked. There wasn't a flavor from Madam Web, so we had to like do our own thing.
I just thought the end of this movie was just the chef's sour kiss at the end.
Yeah, lemon is so bad. Not a popular flavor. So
I have nothing else to say about this movie.
Yeah, I loved, like, that was my favorite part. I was like, 5 minutes before the villain even dies, I'm like, I bet that S falls on him. Like, I just, like, I literally.
Because that was in her vision.
Like, said that out loud to myself.
But here's the thing. It didn't. He got hit by the P.
Oh, he got hit
by the P.
What a twist.
The S hit her. And you know why? Because his S is for Spider-Man. Oh, her web connects us all.
There it is. So she gets blinded, right? She falls in the water. Firework basically explodes in her face.
Underwater, by the way.
I missed her actually getting anything near her face. So when her eyes opened and she was blind, I'm like, all right. I was like, I assume that's what happened, but I missed it.
How is she paralyzed too? Like,
because the S fell on her, and then she drowned.
The movie was a blur at this point. I can't recall exactly what happened.
Yeah.
No, my favorite thing though was like that is one of the most comical zooms I've seen in a since the 80s when she's having her big moment against Ezekiel, and she's like, "Oh, you were so worried about them. You should have been worried about," and it hard zooms right in. "You shouldn't worry about me," and then proceeds to do nothing but watch a letter fall on him. So it was, I love that. That got a big laugh in the theater. It was fantastic.
This was rough. This was a rough movie. Yeah. Like I said, I mean, as a comedy, this movie was 5 stars.
It's fantastic.
As a comic book movie, this movie is a 1-star movie.
It's right there. Comic book movie.
So this ends. All three of the teens now live with Cassie Webb.
She kidnapped them.
She did. Yeah.
It's Stockholm syndrome now. Did everyone pick up that like we talked about? So I don't know that actress from anything else. The Celeste character. Did we pick up that's actually like Spider-Verse? That's her. Later, and her uncle is J. Jonah Jameson.
I refuse to believe that. This movie has no connection to anything.
Celeste O'Connor was in Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Okay. Oh, so there you go. So she has another movie. I assume she's in the upcoming one. Yeah,
she's in the upcoming
one. So there you go. She has something going on. Like, for like all intents and purposes, like I like these. I didn't know her. So and I agree that she was heavy leaning into a stereotype. That's probably what they told her to do. But she was heavy leaning into it. I really liked, I like Isabella Merced. Like, I liked her in Instant Family. I think she did great in Dora the Explorer. She's funny. They did nothing with her, unfortunately. She was just kind of there.
She was the best one out of the three.
She was the best one, and they did not give her much to do. Sydney Sweeney, she's clearly having a moment right now. I didn't watch Euphoria. All I know from that scene is, like, the scene where they think she's trying out for Oklahoma. So all I have is that. And I did go to see the Glenn Powell movie that
I'm sorry is
apparently doing very well, and she's supremely awkward in that movie, so I'm not like the hugest fan, but she was here's the thing, I did see a like interview with her about the movie, and she was actually like really committed to doing this and like really excited about it, and like she went and read all of her Spider-Woman comics, and she was very excited about it, and she's like, oh, I was Like, her suit is good. Like, it, you only see it for like 30 seconds, but it's good. And she looks good in it. And she was like adamant of, she's like, when I was reading all the comics and you see the front page of like her things, like she's usually upside down. I want to come in upside down. And they do have, they did film it, but then they didn't use it. But you do get like a little like tilt where she gets to be somewhat upside down. So it's like, she got what she wanted. Good job. But like, it's kind of rough, but it's so odd to see her. Granted, she kind of blew up after they probably filmed, but seeing her cast as like the shy one and, but at the same time putting her in essentially like Japanese schoolgirl clothing is like so strange to me. And that whole scene in the diner, like when Cassie comes back to like get them, she actually like tries to have an acting moment there where she like really is showing like serious remorse of like, I'm so sorry, I'm so embarrassed. And it was like so strange. It's a weird, really weird beat to hit when like we were just dancing to Toxic. Like, it's very strange.
If I'm the agent for any of these actresses or actors, I am calling Sony and be like, you owe me, mother effer. Like,
they clearly were all confused. Yeah, I don't know what's going on at Marvel that like Tom Hollander is getting checks and they think they're in the MCU, but someone is either being very unforward with what's going on, or everyone just take, they just go, oh, comic book. Yeah. Money. Let's go. So
I agree. These actors and actresses did not go in this movie to make a bad movie. Nobody goes in to make a bad movie. I think the studio on a production, directing, and writing level failed them at every level.
Yeah.
And I would be like, you need to give my client another damn movie. You owe us for putting us in this damn mess. You guys need to produce movies, produce them. Don't put whatever this movie is. Feels like one of the worst produced films I've ever seen. Like, it fails on every level of pre-production, post-production.
Yeah.
I just don't know how this was put out in the shape that it's in.
So. Yeah. I would love to get, like, I said this for the same thing for Rise of Skywalker of like, they had on Disney Plus, they'd had that series that was like the making of Frozen 2. Yeah. And Frozen 2, some people love it. Some people think it's better than the first one. And like, whatever. Like, I appreciate world building, but whatever. But that like docu-series or whatever is fascinating because like they just didn't know what they were doing and they're rushing and you're seeing production. I'm like, I would love to get a series of that for this movie. I think it would be so interesting to see. Granted, it's never going to happen because I'm sure it would make a lot of people look bad, but I would love to see that. Yes.
Yeah, Madam Web is done. There will be no sequel. This was a
one-off. But her web connects us all.
Nothing.
I would love, here's the thing. They can completely drop Madam Web, but sometime in the future in the MCU, can we please just have her like run into someone with an ambulance, just Dakota Johnson. They don't have to say Madam Web. She can be wearing the glasses and just have her like run into a villain or something and just be like, oops, and that's it. Because I think it would be freaking hilarious.
Only if it's
Galactus. That's her go-to move.
On the ambulance afterwards.
Yeah, she can be get squished. It's fine.
Exactly.
Or just Galactus takes a bite out of Earth and she's like,
yeah. She should be the new Stan Lee. She should be in every MCU movie. That's it. Yes. That's her go-to move is just crashing into buildings and villains and stuff. So just put her in the background of every movie. And this also,
Dakota cameo.
I'm going to start it right now of, I know this is an annoying film Twitter kind of thing, but I think there's a campaign that we should do of Madam Web as a Christmas movie because no one in their right mind watches A Christmas Carol, not at Christmas. And she totally does. And yes, it's because it's thematically the exact same thing that she's going through, but who in their right mind watches A Christmas Carol not at Christmas? So it's a Christmas movie, guys.
Oh my god.
Well, let's go into our final thoughts here. Should there be a Madam Web 2? JT, lead us off with your final thoughts, buddy.
Yeah, I think this is one of the worst movies ever made. I think comic book. I think comic book wise, I think it failed on every level of script, special effects, production, post-production. It's an embarrassment that it was released like this. I could see you watching and have fun with it because of how bad it is. But I feel like that will wear off after the second or third viewing. And I don't know, maybe I'll have to watch it again once it hits streaming. Just I'll take the edible. Grab some pizza and give it a watch. But I like movies like Morbius and like Jonah Hex and these other films, they're bad movies, but at least when people talk to each other, it doesn't sound like it was stitched together by ADR, different camera shots, special, like just her and Adam Scott having lunch at the beginning of this movie felt so off and wrong. And I was like, what is happening? There's not even anything going on except for two people sitting down talking. And I don't believe a moment of it. So I just think it's an awful movie. I think it's the worst comic movie ever made.
Jen, how about you? Your final thoughts of this movie?
Oh, I went into this film thinking I was going to be bored after my experience with Morbius, and I was not bored. I was entertained. Was it because it was good? Not necessarily, but it had an interesting idea. Probably not a big money-making idea, but it was an idea nonetheless, and it was something that we hadn't seen before. So I appreciate that they were taking a swing, as Webb's people do, but like it is, I think it is camp. It is camp. And if you like camp, if you like Dakota Johnson as a person, I think this is the movie for you, clearly. Cause like it is a very strange experience, but it is a movie that you should see with other people. I thought, like, I have A-list, so who cares? Like, I'm going to see Nicole Kidman. That's what I'm like. I have to visit her. Otherwise I'll revoke my membership. So it's not the worst movie I saw this year. That's Argyle. It's not the worst comic book movie in my mind. Like, so I was entertained, and it's not a great time at the movies right now. I'm waiting for Dune. Like the Beekeeper has been sitting at the top of my list right now for too long. Like I enjoyed that movie, but I'm like, I didn't expect it to be sitting up there for so long. It's been 2 months. Like, come on, guys. So it's fine. But
The hive is strong.
I would much rather see a Beekeeper 2 before Madam Web, but I would totally love to see some kind of silly little nod to Madam Web in the next Spider-Man movie. And yes, I would like it to be Dakota Johnson crashing into something, because she'd do it. If you pay her, she'll do it.
Benny, lay it on us, brother.
It's a generic superhero movie, and there's some really bad acting in it. And the villain is terrible. But that being said, there's enough fun in the movie that, like, you don't sit and look at the timeline as you're watching the movie thinking, oh, my God, when will this end? Like, Morbius, like, the entire time I'm watching the movie on streaming, I'm looking at the little thing at the bottom like, oh, my God, I can't believe it's only been 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. Please, God, let the next hour go by so fast. This movie I watched in one setting. Was it a good movie? No. Was I like angry like after I watched it? No. I mean, there's enough fun in it that you can get through it. And if somebody put it on, I'm not going to be mad at them. But like I said, I don't even think it's the worst Sony comic book movie. But, you know, if you go in with lowered expectations, if you drink a couple of small bottles of vodka beforehand, I think you can derive a lot from this, you know, but only under those specific circumstances.
Yeah, Sarah Michelle Gellar posted that she was there with a glass of wine and espresso martini to see Madam Web. Like, she's part of the group here. She knows what's at.
That's the way to watch
this. Yeah. Like, when I walked into the theater, like, it wasn't a packed house, but it was a scattering of different groups. And everyone's kind of had the same vibe of, like, yep, we're doing this. Let's go. Like, it was just kind of a strange vibe. I didn't go on Valentine's Day. If you went on Valentine's Day, you are a special kind of person, and I love you. But no, we went a little bit after the fact, but we had a fun time. And I think, like, I think Benny's right. Like, the thing is, especially when it comes to, like, the reaction to this movie, there is a nostalgia factor for older 2000s kind of comic book movies. Like, given time, like, you start seeing them through a different lens. I just watched film Twitter for the past, like, 48 hours go insane about Incredibles 2. Of saying it's the worst piece of garbage I've ever seen in my whole life. And everything now is like these extremes of it's either the best thing ever or deserves to die in a fire. So there's a little bit of ground in between those two. And that's where Madam Web lives. Like, it's fine to just go to the movies and have a silly time. And I think that's where Madam Web excels. Don't do dumb things.
Wow, you folks can't see this, but like Jen has this awesome time, like
that is the second time StreamYard has done something like that for me. I don't know if these things happen; they just happen. I'm apparently a very StreamYard emoji kind of person.
I was legitimately going to end podcast and be like, dude, I don't think I can say anything better. We're going to wrap it up. And then all of a sudden, Jen gives a thumbs up. And she drops that amazing pearl on us all, fireworks start erupting behind her.
But don't worry, guys. She has telepathy. Because I'm in the fireworks
factory. Yeah.
She knew exactly where they're going to hit. So that's she came out unscathed.
Yeah. She didn't see the firework coming directly at her face, though.
No, that one.
No, she knew she had to really fulfill her potential. She had to go blind. Otherwise, the blind can see further, apparently.
What?
Fair enough. Well, we are going to wrap it up. Jen, we want to thank you so much for being on the show. You are welcome back anytime to talk about any movie you would love to be able to
do. The next time you have the worst movie ever that no one else wants to talk about, I'll come on.
As always, folks, you can catch us every Thursday. We're going to be reviewing, what's the movie that we're reviewing?
Land
Bad. Land of Bad.
Land of Bad. Whew. God, I just need Dune and Ghostbusters to come around. Like, this year so far for movies
is close. Next week is the week after Land of Bad is Dune. And the reviews have been pretty positive. Let's
go. I'm excited for that.
Desert.
But anyhow, thank you. Tune in to settle the score. You have Benny versus JTE today, because today's Thursday, tonight, playing on Settle the Score. Tune in for that. Jen, as our guest, take us out.
Go see Madam Web. Maybe.
Perfect. Nailed it.
I was waiting for Benny.
Good night, everybody.
There it is. There it is.